This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and Chief Quality Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
I'm Gemma Jones. I'm an improvement coach in the UK, working with people across the globe.
Well, folks, we have a dear friend, and our guest today is someone that's been on the podcast many times. He's an author. Many of you will already know who he is. I have the pleasure of serving with him as part of the faculty fellow at the Shingo Institute and as an examiner. But it's my dear, dear friend, Chris Butterworth. And Chris, for those that maybe don't know who you are, they don't know about all the books you've written, could you kind of tell everyone a little bit about your background and who you are?
Sure. Thanks, Skip, and thank you for inviting me back again. It's just a great pleasure to be here again. Yes, I was many years ago, I was a senior leader at Jaguar Cars, and I started to understand what improvement really was. And we was involved in a greenfield site with coaches from Toyota and Nissan and Honda, and really opened my eyes up to a whole different world. So I moved out of operations into improvement. I've worked in that field for 30-odd years, and now I'm kind of semi-retired, where I'm a faculty fellow for the Shingo Institute. I teach people how to teach the workshops, and I have the pleasure of being able to collaborate with lots of different people to write books. Just recently, one book number four won the Shingo Publication Award for Why Care, and I'm currently halfway through book number seven with two new co-authors. So I just never stop my learning journey.
Fantastic, Chris. Well, let me kind of kick the conversation off. What we want to talk about today really came out of a conversation you and I were having. A lot of people know about the Shingo model, that five diamond model, and it's very influential here at Baptist on our Baptist management system, which is our improvement system. But the area that doesn't get enough attention are the three insights, those three insights of organizational excellence. So we want to kind of talk a little bit about that, and if we can. So Chris, kind of kick us off with, what are those organizational excellence insights?
Sure. So we'll go through them one by one and have a conversation about each one. I think that would be useful. So the first insight is sounds very simple, but the more you think about it, the deeper you realize it is. So it's quite simple. Ideal results require ideal behaviors. Okay, fine. So that's great. And now I got really reflecting on this as I was looking at different organizations. What I saw them doing is look at the model and jump straight into defining behaviors. Oh, yeah, these are some behaviors we want. And I thought, well, you know, how do you know they're the right behaviors? Are they ideal behaviors? What are they trying to achieve? So you shouldn't really start with behaviors. You should start with, what's the result I want? And the key word in that insight is ideal. What's the ideal result? And Shingo Institute has a definition of ideal in this context. It says an ideal result should be sustainable and it should improve over time. Now, if you think about it in that way, it's a very close link to one of the principles, which is seek perfection. In other words, what we think of today as an ideal result could be very different in a year, 2 years, 3 years' time, because things are changing constantly. You know, our expectations are changing constantly. And one of my relatives recently went into hospital for a major 3.5-hour operation and was home the same afternoon. Now, that would just not have happened a few years ago. I must have been there for days and days. So what we think of as ideal, we need to recognize that will change, which means actually what we've thought of as ideal behaviors will also need to change as we set the bar higher on what the ideal result might be. And then I was reflecting on a bit more, and I was thinking, well, ideal for who? You know, ideal result for who? So then it's actually quite a big bar when you think it in that way, because it's got to be ideal for the organization. It's got to be ideal for our people. It's got to be ideal for the customers or patients. And then you can take it even further. And they said, well, it should also, how do we make it ideal for the community? How do we make it ideal even for the environment? And I'm sure we could think of more things as well. So this whole thing around what do we really mean by ideal results, I think is worth a bit of time to reflect on it before we jump straight into behaviors. But also recognizing that we won't land on, it's not a casting stone. That ideal result is what we think of as ideal today. We'll change it as expectations increase and as our understanding deepens and as we make improvements to our processes. Well, Chris, that's the first insight. Yeah.
Chris, once again, thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And it makes perfect sense. You know, ideal results require behavior. And it seems super simple, but, you know, you have this people aspect and you know, people make it messy. And you know, obviously, if we could get our people to perform those ideal behaviors, everything would work out fine. But you talk about there are some things that organizations can do to help influence those behaviors and help drive those behaviors. Absolutely. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Sure. So I think it's a really, really powerful question, because what we need to do is often when people think about behaviors, they'll say, oh, yeah, well, that's how they need to behave. That people over there need to behave. Now, they need to do that in order for this to work. And actually, we need to look in the mirror and say, if that's the ideal result, how do I need to behave? What is it I need to demonstrate that's going to help the ideal result? Now, we can inform that with a couple of questions. So you talked about our people, the optimization. Well, you know, we might want to say to ourselves, well, how do I need, what's the some examples of ideal behaviors I would need from our people to get that result? If that's the behavior I need from them, how do I need to behave to support? So you're trying to make a link between these behaviors. I mean, if you're high up in the organization, you might not have a direct link to people on the shop floor very often or in the, but so you might say, okay, well, how do I need the manager to behave in order for that to support that behavior? And if that's the way I need the manager to behave, how do I need to behave with the manager? So what you're trying to do here is cascade the behaviors. And occasionally it might be the same behavior, but one of the things I've learned and I've seen being really effective is the power of recognition when it's connected to behaviors. And recognition by senior leaders, we really underestimate what that means. So if we start with, you know, what's an ideal, what do we think of ideal today? What might be some behaviors? What we should do all the time is reinforce those behaviors with recognition, so that we recognize the behavior more than we recognize an activity. So, you know, we don't reward people for doing something, we reward it for the way they've done something, or we recognize it for the way they've done something. So there's lots more, but let me pause just there and take some feedback on those points.
No, that's great. Go ahead, Gemma.
I really like what you said, Chris, about, you know, that these things are not set in stone and that they should be improving over time. And so one thing that's sort of coming to me there is this really requires some really good, robust communication. Now, you just talked about, you know, recognition, but I think there's also communication at the other end of it in terms of, you know, if the results are changing because they're improving and the expected or required behaviors are changing, that's also going to need some really robust communication so everybody knows where we're at. So people aren't still striving towards the results that were required last year or last month. So how does that work?
It's a really, really good point. So I think one of the traps we fall into with communication is we always think about it as one way. So you see this often at huddles, for example, or team meetings, and the communication is intel. Right? So it's a track. We're on send. I always thought we're on send. We're sending out. This is what the. Now, the chances of people all hear it. Are they really understanding and listening? Now, the definition of communication is it's two way. So when in any of that activity needs to create an environment where it's a question and answer session, a discussion, or even if it's something really big and important, actually encouraging people to have a structured discussion around, well, what does that mean for us then? And then being coached by the leader on the implications. So I think for communication to be effective, we have to think about more than it's, you know, there's lots and lots of different elements to it. But one of the key things is it enables a discussion where people can ask questions and deepen their understanding of what we're telling them. And key is part of that, it's got to answer the why, not just the what and when you've got to do this.
Yeah, so people have got to be super clear on why those results have changed, yes, why those behaviors have changed. Okay, yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah.
And Chris, you know, these behaviors, you know, in order to drive and influence, they have to be based on principles. And I think that that an organization has to have some, you know, we have our 11 guiding principles, yes, of our Baptist management system that are, yeah, very, very similar to the Shingo Institute. Talk to us a little bit about those principles. And the second part of that question is, are there some universal principles that every organization should have in order to drive those behaviors?
Great, great, great question. So, and thank you for the leading. So another of the insights is that principles inform ideal behaviors. So I'm looking at the ideal results that I need, and I might come up with some behaviors. Well, I don't know if they're, you know, what am I using? What am I using to help me inform them? And for me, I think all of the principles are universal in different ways, but the foundational principles of what's called the cultural enabler dimension, which are respect every individual and lead with humility. I don't know any organization that embeds a culture of continuous improvement without genuinely embedding those two principles. So if we think about principles informing behavior, take on Gemma's point there about communication, right? So is it showing respect to individuals if we don't communicate? Or if we just do stuff without explaining the why? No. So communicate, respect to every individual. We might not think about this, but how we do communication will demonstrate whether we really are living that respect to every individual principle and bringing it to life. When we explain things, do we just assume everyone knows the same as us, or do we act with humility and recognize that people will know a lot more than us in many cases, you know, and actually do we engage them in what might be the best way of communicating with this group? What do you need to know? So the principle, and I'm just picking on that example because we spoke about it earlier, but the principles of respect every individual and lead with humility are foundational to all of these behaviors. And we think about the way that leaders behave as leading with humility is not about, you know, servile leadership. So it's about, I want to understand, this is the ideal result, and this is the ideal behaviors that we think we need. Now, I might want to demonstrate humility by engaging people in getting them to say what they think some of those ideal behaviors might be.
Yeah, Chris, I want to jump in there. I think it's a really good point. And again, oftentimes we don't call out the principles that are at play. We may have a behavior that is a behavior we see often, but connecting it back to a principle for a cultural enabler is really, I found it to be very helpful to link it back and to say, oh, that's great. I mean, that shows great respect for your teammates, or that's a great way to show empathy for what's happening, you know, at that certain time.
And I think that's a great way to do it, because it's easy to forget, and we need to kind of bring them to life. And I think one of the roles of leaders is to help people to see and understand the principles. They're really useful way to test behaviors and understand behaviors. So if we talk about principles more, people will start thinking in a principle mindset. So that, I think that whole, if we think about one way to think about the principles, I mean, I really, when we teach the principles, when we're doing the workshops, we tend to do like a one-for-one relationship between this is the principle and this is behavior, because that's just a way to help people understand it. But in the real world, a really good behavior will demonstrate 3, 4, or 5 different principles.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and I think that's excellent. And again, I guess I'm caught up thinking about, you know, again, very practical, very to do, you know, is kind of how I show up. And so in thinking about that, I'm thinking, you know, we have our principles and we have kind of those articulated. We've attempted to have a list of ideal behaviors, but I'm not sure it's comprehensive enough. And so my question is, should you try to do that? Should you try to have a static list of ideal behaviors that you would like to see to accomplish, to help accomplish the ultimate purpose of organizational excellence?
So it's a really great question, but and there are different views on this. So I'll share my what I've seen work. So what I've seen not work is as a leadership team define the ideal behaviors wanted across the whole organization and send them to everybody in a communication document that says this is how we're going to behave. All right. Oh, okay. It destined to fail straight away. What I've seen stand more chance of work. And this is important that it starts with the leadership team sitting down and saying, okay, well, how do we need to be? How are we going to show up? It might even be, how are we going to show up with each other? You know, what's a great phrase I've learned over the last few years is the leadership shadow. What's our leadership shadow going to be that we cast when we're out talking to people? You know, what do they see when they see us? And with Sui Shingle, who's the previous president of the Shingle Institute, passed away a couple of years ago, he used to say, you know, you've got to be able to, those behaviors have to be embedded whether people are watching you or not. You know, it's just the way that you are, not that you do something because you know people are observing you. So you start with ourselves. Now then, what one of the organizations that has won multiple Shingle prizes around the world has done is to share those organizational behaviors with their teams, but then say to them, this is our ideal results we want. These are how we are going to show up as leaders. What behaviors do you need in your team to deliver the results? So what you're doing then is delegating that behavior. Now, it's not anarchy. It's not like, yeah, do whatever you like. You know, there's a framework of to do it. But what you get then is you get ownership of behaviors at different levels. And you can the leaders can coach on them if they're something they're not quite right. They might ask some questions about it. But actually, they're trying to achieve two things. They're trying to achieve alignment. So it's alignment to the ideal results, alignment to the culture that we want, and engagement in that results and culture. Now, if we think about it that way, you can't get alignment and engagement by just telling people what they've got to do and telling people the way they've got to behave. You have to engage them in the answers and help them to come up with answers for themselves. So Brad, partly it's exactly the right thing to do in terms of defining the behaviors how we should as leaders turn up, but then a slightly different approach to get them, bring them to life in the organization.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. That's great.
I really like that question, Brad. And it made me think of a situation I was in a leadership team years ago where someone on the leadership team had, I don't know whether they'd been somewhere or been on a course, but they heard about this principle of, you know, if you come across someone as you're walking around the site, you know, if they come within 3 meters of you, you must say hello. If they are this many meters away, you must smile and acknowledge them. And if they're this, and they were like, I really love this. I saw this and how the people loved this guy. And it's this lovely warm reception. This is something we must all do. So as a leadership team now, we're going to have these behaviors that we're going to do with smiling. And it got really ridiculous because we're all like doing it. And then everybody in the factory started complaining that people are interrupting them all the time and everybody's saying hello, hello, hello. And it got really ridiculous and it felt really inauthentic. And yes. I think that's got to be a central part of this. We're dealing with people who have feelings and emotions and we're asking them to put their all into their work, whatever it is they do. And so these behaviours of, yeah, we want to have some guidelines and they should be tied back to principles, but we've also got to allow people to be authentically themselves.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So that it feels like this is real. I really believe that Brad is treating me with respect. He's not just, you know, checking off a list of things he's been told to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Jimmy, you brought in the word authentic, which I think is a great add. And it also shows the depth of what we're talking about. Like, it's really hard to just come up quickly with an authentic, ideal behavior. Right, Chris? You know, I want to get your response to that.
Yeah, no, we need to put thought into it, you know, and right. need to need to also apply PDSA to behaviors. Let's have a first go, and then let's test it out, and let's refine it, and constantly refine it. And you know, it's far better. This is where I was coming from when I talked about alignment and engagement. And that engagement, you need, that Gemma's quite right, you need the authenticity, but also the engagement. You need to create an environment where it's so people can learn and they can refine those behaviors and make them better over time. You know, the worst thing we can do is say, oh, well, actually, that word's not quite right. If you make it that word, it'll be even better. Well, it might be even better for a short space of time, but you've just completely disengaged everyone who came up with something they believed in. Right? So it's a matter of letting go a little bit, letting go, because if we over-focus too much on alignment, yes, we'll have alignment, but we'll also have complete constraint on cutting out people's thinking. So let's make sure we do both.
Yeah. Well, Chris, all right. Let's say an organization, you know the results that you want, and you've identified, okay, we think we know the behaviors that are going to drive these results. We've got our principles that we think are going to help influence those behaviors, but people still have to do the work. Yes. And we still have to give them a way to do the work. Talk to us about that next piece.
Fantastic. So yeah, the third insight is that purpose and systems will drive behaviors. Now, what I've seen several times is organizations investing, in one case, millions of dollars to come up with a whole new set of company values and behaviors, and communicated it all around globally, and they're on the wall everywhere, and people had to recite them. 12 months later, none of the behaviors changed. Why? Because what they didn't do was recognize that if we leave our systems that we have today in place, then we'll get the behaviors we've always had before. Because purpose and systems will drive behaviors, whether we intend them to or not. And they can drive bad behaviors just as easily as they can drive good behaviors. So what makes the difference to the prize-winning side is that the leadership have recognized this, and systems are constantly refined so that they drive nearer to the ideal behaviors. So when we think about what purpose and systems, so think about the purpose for the BMS purpose is continually improve patient care by designing, I'm reading this, but I'm not pretending that I know it off heart, right? Continuously improve patient care by designing principle-based systems that encourage ideal behaviors, allowing everyone to make a positive impact. Now, that's a great purpose statement. Do we then, you know, what the next step of that is to say, okay, well, in the design of our systems, are we ensuring that they're designed to deliver that purpose? Have we defined the behaviors that we want to see that bring the system to life? And have we also taken those into account in the design of the system? Now, this can sound quite complicated, but actually it's not something you can do overnight. This is actually the topic of the new book I'm currently co-writing at the moment about how we design systems deliberately to drive behaviors. So we do it step by step. One of the most powerful tools is what we call look, listen, and learn by leaders. So we go and talk to our people and we say, is there anything, what's stopping you from anything that get interfering with you doing a great job? What is it that's stopping you doing a great job? And you, what we find is it's very rarely the person, it's nearly always something wrong in the system or process that we have given them that stops them from doing a great job. So this is where humility comes back in. You know, well, actually, oh dear, I'm giving you that. You know, some of the best companies I know in the world, the leaders will actually apologize to people and say, I'm really sorry I've given you a process that's allowed that mistake to happen. But the second part of that is equally important. Will you join our problem-solving team to help us redesign the process so that mistake can't happen again? So you're actually engaging them in taking away the root cause of the mistake. But what we're doing there is refining the system. We're refining the system to change the behavior in such a way that we remove that mistake. Or we make it happen, we make it ideal, we make it impossible for that mistake to happen. Quite often, the way our systems are designed, it's really easy to make mistakes. They're really complicated. And it's really hard for people to understand whether I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So we simplify our systems. Every system should be designed to make it easier to do the right thing than to do the wrong thing.
So that's just like Deming said, you know, every system is perfectly designed to get the results that it's getting.
Absolutely.
I want to get into a little bit. I think that, you know, we've covered the three insights and I think we've covered well the depth of each one, but it's not just the depth of each one. It's the interdependencies of these three insights how they all kind of play off each other in that. So, Chris, what do you think of that?
Oh, a great point, Brad. None of them stand in isolation. You know, so we talked about a great example is that we talk about ideal results requiring ideal behaviors. Well, great, let's define some behaviors. But if we then don't refine our systems to get those behaviors, they'll just be words on the wall that won't mean anything. You know, but equally, if we write behaviors in the absence of underpinning them like principles, or even design our systems without even thinking about principles, they're not going to be great behaviors, not going to be ideal behaviors. So all three work together for me, and all three for me, they provide the why that underpins the Shingle Model Diamonds. So it's the ideal results require ideal behavior is that the diamond on the left of the model results. Then the central of the model is the culture and principles. So what are the ideal behaviors? And then on the right of the model is the systems will drive those behaviors that deliver the results. So we've always got to remember that all of us exist, every organization exists to deliver a result. People want to come to work to do a good job, which means they really want to understand what does that ideal result look like? How do I contribute to it? So if we put those three things together, then what we do, we engage our people in a way that they feel they make a genuine difference.
Chris, as a Shingo examiner, you've visited hundreds of companies. And is there one of these insights that organizations tend to struggle with more than the other?
I think the whole thing around systems driving behavior is probably the one that many organizations struggle with. Many organizations have principles and values and then describe them in behaviors, but embedding the behaviors is what they struggle with. Engaging the people in coming up with the behaviors rather than telling people what the behaviors have got to be is a different angle. But I think the challenge is, and this is why we decided to write the new book on it, the challenge is that people try and make systems perfect from day one.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't. Yeah. You cannot do that. You've got to stand back and be realistic and say, no, we have to apply PDSA to every system. We'll make a good stab of it, but in the best will in the world, it's probably going to be 80%.
Chris, I love that. I want to highlight that point. Really, this is a mindset that we have to have and a journey, a continual effort to kind of get to this. It's not a static kind of do this exercise and be done with
no.
it. It's a continual effort to refine and really get to the right ideal behaviors over time.
Yes. And then even when we get there, Brad, we might have a new expectation on the
That's
ideal
exactly
result.
Right.
So we have to continue refining it.
We appreciate that as continuous improvement people and people who are passionate about these things. But I do think we should recognize that for some people on the other side of that, that can be exhausting, you know, the constant change. Now, obviously, we need constant change. We constantly need to be experimenting and making improvement and figuring out, you know, what was wrong. I think we know the least about something when, you know, day one when we start to design it, and we should allow it to develop and change. But that can also be exhausting for the people on the front line who are. And again, I come back to, and I know it's a broken record, but the communication piece of it is so important. Like, why is this changed? Why are we trying something different? Why does that system now look different? When you thought it was great, now we've made changes to it, and this is why. So I think that communication, two-way communication thing is so important.
It is. But also, you said a key word there, Jim, when you said, we've made these changes. Right? So I think that's the other aspect of that, is that imposition of change rather than the collaborative development of the system. Because the people who are day-to-day operating the system know best what's not working.
Absolutely. But not everybody that's working the system can be involved in the change. You know, you might have thousands of nurses on the front line, sure. and you might have got some of those nurses to help make the change, but it's probably not all of them.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be imposed on some people. And we've really got to think about the language and, you know, how we tell them what's going on.
Yes.
Jim, that's a great point, because I think we really struggle with that, because it's easy, again, as a big organization, you know, 24,000 employees covering three states and hundreds of miles. How do you improve a standard and deploy that in a way that makes sense? And that's really hard to do. And I think then it gets into how we define standard. How strict is the standard? You know, how do we think about that? But it really goes back to some of the principles that we have, and making sure that principles are always informing that ideal behavior. You know, so the principle is the humility to say, is that really work in Union City, Tennessee, versus does that work in Meridian, Mississippi? It may be slightly different with a similar goal and a similar objective.
And one way to think of that, one way to think about it is that the ideal result might not change.
That's right.
But the behaviors might, the deliberate might be different.
Well, Chris, this has been fantastic. Really, really good. I think it, with trying not to get too nerdy, you know, I think it really, you know, brings attention again to that we're dealing with this complex socio-technical system. If it was only a technical system, if we only had AI and robots and bots doing everything, well, it's a different discussion, right? But who wants to live in that world? I don't personally. You know, I want to live with humans. I want to interact with humans. And I think that's why this conversation is so important. Chris, if you would, before I close us out, if you would just summarize once again, what are those three insights for organizational excellence?
Sure. So, ideal results require ideal behavior. Purpose and systems drive behavior. Principles inform ideal behavior.
Fantastic. Chris, well, thank you so much. And I know this will not be the last time you join us. You're always welcome. So grateful to work with you. But on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Chris. And I want to put in a plug, cbenterpriseexcellence.com. I had the pleasure of taking a systems design workshop with Chris through Shingo, but also through his website. He has other workshops that you can take as well.
Thanks.